Welcome to Law Days and Lattes, the podcast where we blend the world of law and business with a warm cup of information and common sense. I'm your host, Sydney Whelan, attorney, real estate investor, and business owner. Each week, we'll be your go-to source for legal insights, business advice, and so much more. Whether you're a seasoned professional, an ambitious entrepreneur, or simply someone seeking guidance, we'll have you covered. From navigating the legal landscape to empowering you with valuable business strategies, we'll explore the legal side of life and enjoy a virtual latte along the way. So, grab your favorite latte, get comfortable, and let's dive into Law Days and Lattes. I'm your host, Sydney Whelan. I would like to welcome you to episode 10 of Law Days and Lattes, sponsored by the Whelan Law Firm of Moberly, Missouri, where we strive to serve you, your family, and your business professionally and with the utmost compassion and understanding. Today, I want to address one of the most heart-wrenching questions that I hear from clients. My spouse recently died, so what do I do now? While they are often choking back tears, what they really mean is, what do I need to do legally to move forward? First of all, if this is you and your situation, please accept my condolences. I know there is so much on your plate right now and so many things on your mind. Just let me say, take time to breathe and get your bearings. It doesn't all have to be done today. Everything will fall into place in time and you will eventually regain your equilibrium. Let me say that I have not been in your shoes, but many of my clients have. And as an attorney that frequently counsels clients in your situation, I have walked hand in hand with others through many of the things you are going through, and there are some things that I can share to help ease your mind and prepare you for the situations ahead of you. Most people, including most of my clients who are married, have most of their property either in trust or in joint ownership with their spouse. Let's address the joint ownership of property first. In Missouri, if you own joint property with your spouse, you likely own it as husband and wife, as tenants by the entirety. This means that during your lifetime, when both spouses are living, the two of you hold title to your property in one entity as husband and wife. If something happens to one spouse, the surviving spouse owns the property at the death of the first spouse. Typically, this ensures that at the death of the first spouse, no probate estate is necessary for the jointly owned property. This is a good position to be in, legally speaking. The downfall of this type of ownership is that at the death of the first spouse, now any property owned by the husband and wife as tenants by the entirety is now solely owned by the surviving spouse. The problem with this is that now the surviving spouse is the sole owner of any marital property, subjecting all of the marital property to probate in the event that the surviving spouse dies. Now, all of the property owned by the husband and wife is now subject to the rules of probate upon the death of the second spouse. As an attorney, I will tell you that this is the most precarious time for a surviving spouse regarding his or her property. If this is your situation and you and your spouse have not executed a revocable trust, your heirs can be put in the position of dealing with the expensive and lengthy probate process at your death. As you may recall, if you have listened to my previous podcast episodes, anything or any property that you have in your own name at the time of your death must go through probate in order to be distributed to your heirs. And when I say in your own name, what I mean is that any property that is in your name alone that does not have a beneficiary named or is not jointly owned with another person is subject to the probate process at your death. Now, if you are one of the majority of folks who have property jointly owned with their spouse, but not in a trust at the time of your death, then at the death of your spouse, you run the risk of all of your property going through the probate court at the time of your death, if you happen to die shortly after your spouse. Again, as I have said many times, the probate process is an expensive and drawn-out process that can probably be avoided with some proper estate planning. This episode is intended to guide you and offer suggestions on what you should do at this point to avoid the hassle and expense of probate for your heirs now that your spouse is no longer living. First, I want to thank you for tuning into this podcast episode. Information is key, and the more you know, the better you will be prepared to deal with the issues going forward. If you and your spouse put your assets into a revocable trust prior to the death of your spouse, then legally you should be in very good shape at the moment to avoid most of your assets going through probate. As we have discussed, putting your assets into a revocable trust while you are living takes those assets out of your name individually and puts ownership of your property into the trust. Therefore, anything owned by the trust at the death of the first spouse is still owned by the trust at that person's death. Anything in the trust name is not in an individual's name at the time of death and therefore not subject to the probate process. If you and your spouse did not have the opportunity to set up a trust prior to the death of the first spouse, you may still avoid probate if all of your assets were jointly held in your name and your spouse's name prior to your spouse's death. However, if you did not set up a joint revocable trust prior to your spouse's death, all of your assets are likely now in your name alone. Your heirs run the risk that all of your assets will have to go through the probate process at your death if you do not do some much-needed estate planning now. So, what do you do now? Some attorneys will tell you that the first thing you should do is call your lawyer. I personally do not always subscribe to this approach. I know you have questions. I know that at this point in your life, you have a lot on your plate and you do not know where to turn. Just let me tell you that you have time. There are very few things in the legal world that are emergencies. Take time to get your bearings. Take time to manage the funeral arrangements and take time to grieve with your family and celebrate the life of your loved one and the life that you shared with them. There are so many things that will be on your mind and you will need some time, most likely, to gather your thoughts. If you have legal questions and it will ease your mind, then by all means, call me or your family attorney as soon as you are comfortable doing so. I just want to emphasize that the legal issues do not always have to take precedence over your own self-care or the care of your family. Once the funeral or memorial arrangements are made and the immediate family has had time to process the death of your spouse, it may be time to check with your family lawyer to plan your next steps. Part of this process is to make sure that all necessary parties or entities have been contacted and notified of the death of your loved one. This can include Social Security or the Social Security Administration, former employers if there are pension or retirement accounts that need to be dealt with, life insurance claims and bank accounts, or other accounts that may or may not be jointly titled or have named surviving beneficiaries. Remember, if there are any accounts that have joint owners, or in the alternative, have named beneficiaries, then those joint owners or named beneficiaries are now the owner of those accounts upon submission of proof of death of your spouse. If there is any property, or there are accounts that remain in the sole name of your deceased spouse, then those assets will need to be submitted to the probate court to transfer those assets to you or another family member. In Missouri, you have 1 year from the date of death to open up a probate estate if that is necessary. In another podcast episode, we discuss the procedures for opening a probate estate if there are any assets that end up in your spouse's name alone at that spouse's death. The purpose of this episode is to make sure that any assets that are now in your name alone because of your spouse's death are retitled in such a manner and in such a way that your kids or other heirs do not have to probate your property at your death. Once we are in this position and you have had some time to reflect, now is the time to sit down with your attorney to talk about your own estate planning and how to manage your affairs so that your heirs are taken care of in the most efficient and cost-effective way, avoiding probate if at all possible, ensuring a smooth and hassle-free transfer of your property to your loved ones. If you have pre-planned, visited with me earlier, or simply listen to my podcast episodes, you know my thoughts on estate planning and the advantages of revocable living trusts. Revocable living trusts are one of the most important and comprehensive estate planning tools in our tool chest today, and they have many advantages. They work now, while you're living, as well as after your death. They are private documents, never requiring that they be filed or recorded in probate or in public places. They avoid probate. It's not anyone's business what property is held by your trust or how your property is distributed unless you choose to tell someone. Revocable living trusts are both amendable and revocable and can be changed easily at any time as your life or situation changes. Even if you decide that a revocable living trust is not for you, there are other estate planning tools that you should consider. Revocable living trust, or any other type of trust for that matter, are not do-it-yourself projects. As an estate planning attorney, I will tell you that you will spend more money in the long run trying to fix a do-it-yourself trust than you or your loved ones will ever spend having a carefully and professionally drafted estate plan. Revocable living trusts are not the only legal tools for avoiding probate for surviving spouses. Let me tell you about a few other things. The first is beneficiary deeds. Beneficiary deeds are available in most states. As always, the rules for beneficiary deeds are state-specific, and you should consult an estate planning attorney familiar with the rules in your state. In Missouri, the rules for beneficiary deeds are statutory. For those listeners who are unfamiliar with beneficiary deeds, let me explain. Beneficiary deeds are deeds to your real estate that allow you to name a beneficiary or beneficiaries of your property to take ownership of that real estate at your death. In Missouri, the rules are as follows. The beneficiary deeds must be executed or signed prior to your death and recorded in the Recorder of Deeds office in the county where the real property lies prior to your death. Just executing the deed and putting it in your lockbox at the bank does not work. If done properly, the beneficiary deed ensures that your named beneficiary will be the record owner of the real property upon providing proof of your death. Until your death, however, you remain the record owner of the property and are free to sell or mortgage the property as you see fit during your lifetime without the permission or even the knowledge of your named beneficiary. Beneficiary deeds do have their limitations. One example is an older gentleman that came into my office after the death of his spouse. He and his spouse had gone to a local attorney for the purpose of estate planning prior to his wife's death. The other attorney was a very nice gentleman, probably with the best of intentions and with the purpose of keeping the estate planning simple and inexpensive. The older estate planning attorney prepared a beneficiary deed for the gentleman that was now sitting in my office, probably with the promise to keep it out of probate. But unfortunately, they ignored other problems with this approach. The prior attorney had prepared a beneficiary deed for this gentleman, naming all 9 of his children as beneficiaries of the family farm. Thankfully, this was a person that I had known for my entire life, and I knew his family history. He did have 9 children, all adults by this time, and because I had known the family well, I knew that there were some family members that did not always get along fabulously with other members of the family. My first question to this client was, "Does all of your kids get along well together?" Well, of course, the answer was a resounding no. In fact, some of them didn't talk to the others, and there were frequent disagreements among the siblings. I explained to this gentleman that when he passed, all of his kids and their spouses would likely have to agree on whether to sell the family farm. And if so, to whom should they sell it and for how much money? Because all of them and their spouses would be required to sign off on any deed at the time of the sale. It didn't take long for him to realize that this was an unworkable solution. While he might have avoided probate, the siblings would likely have ended up in court partitioning ownership of the property and possibly forcing a sale of the family farm at a liquidation sale on the courthouse steps. Not what anyone hopes for. In this situation, we ended up putting the property into a revocable trust, naming 2 people he trusted to manage the property and make decisions upon his death, and to disperse the land and proceeds appropriately between his surviving adult children. Another option for avoiding future probate is jointly owned property. But keep in mind, any property you jointly own with another person will become the sole property of that person at your death. While this may be an effective way for your heirs to avoid probate, it also has its pitfalls. Any property jointly owned with another can make that property available for the joint owner without any further permission required by you. Meaning, if the joint owner wants to withdraw all of the money from your joint bank account, you may have little or no recourse against that person if he or she steals or misappropriates your hard-earned cash. The property that is in your joint account, probably your money, may be at risk if the creditors of the new joint owner decide to garnish or attach your account to satisfy a debt of the joint owner, or if the joint owner files bankruptcy. Another issue that you have to consider is whether or not you may end up needing government assistance or Medicaid to pay for nursing home care. Before you retitle your assets into joint names with others, please talk to your estate planning attorney about this issue. Remember, you cannot give away your property to qualify for government assistance, or you run the risk of being disqualified for those benefits. The retitling of your assets can have some serious consequences, so beware and consult with legal counsel before taking this step. I'm not saying it is never a good idea to add a joint owner to your property, but you should carefully consider the possible consequences if you choose to go this route. The next option for you is a will. Remember that wills are your ticket to probate. So many people come to me asking for a will, thinking that a will avoids probate. This is not true. In fact, a will must be administered by the probate court to be effective. This is not always a bad thing. It does instruct the probate court to distribute the property to your chosen beneficiaries. It is just that the will should not be your only estate planning document. So, what happens if your spouse dies and all of your assets did not have your name on them? If he or she had a will, that will instruct the probate court on your spouse's wishes regarding their property. Any assets that were in your spouse's name alone at the time of your death will eventually be distributed by the probate court to your spouse's heirs and devisees. If your spouse did not leave a will, but died with assets in their name alone at the time of their death, the state statutes in the place where your spouse resided or where the property is located will determine how those assets will be distributed. In Missouri, the surviving spouse will be entitled to certain exempt assets and an allowance for the first year after the death of the spouse. Those exempt assets and spousal allowance will be determined by the probate court and set aside to the surviving spouse before any other assets are distributed to the surviving beneficiaries or to creditors. If there is no will and no trust, the distribution of the remaining assets of the deceased spouse will be distributed according to the distribution scheme set out in the state statutes for intestate succession. Remember, intestate simply means distribution without a will. There are many variations of the probate process, and an attorney familiar with the probate process in your state is the best person to guide you through this. The specific details of handling your spouse's assets are determined by whether or not there was a trust or a will, the value of the potential probate estate, and how your spouse's property was titled at the time of your spouse's death. As we often say, the best defense is a good offense. The sooner you and your spouse prepare for the inevitable death of the first spouse, the more prepared you and your loved ones will be, and there will be less stress for you as a surviving spouse during a very stressful and sometimes very lonely time. With careful prior planning, you can plan for situations where you may or may not want to sell your property, move to a smaller place, or simply a place closer to other family members. I often counsel my clients not to make sudden or life-changing decisions within that first year if it can be avoided. So many changes at one time can be overwhelming at a time when you may be very vulnerable to other people's thoughts and well-meaning advice. While it's not always possible, it's preferable to make and execute your estate plans well in advance while you and your spouse are together and can calmly and reasonably think through your options and pre-plan some of those important decisions together. If you find yourself in this situation now, and even if you didn't get the chance to pre-plan, you are doing the right things now by listening to this podcast and becoming informed. At the Whelan Law Firm, we take your situation seriously and will compassionately guide you through this very difficult time. Thank you for listening. I hope that you have found this episode helpful. We will put our contact information in the show notes. If you would like more information, please reach out to us to learn how we can help you through this difficult time in your life. As a reminder, if you hit the subscribe button, you will automatically be alerted when a new episode airs. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a 5-star review and share it with your friends and family. As always, my friends, grab a cup of coffee or your favorite latte, hold your loved ones tight, and have a great week.
This podcast episode contains general information for discussion purposes only. Each case is different and must be judged on its own merits. Missouri rules generally prohibit lawyers from advertising that they specialize in particular areas of the law. This show should not be construed to suggest such specialization. Nothing on this show should be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. This information is not intended to create an attorney-client relationship, and the listening or viewing of this podcast does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.